Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
Well, nothing exemplifies the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat more than what we saw in Game 7 of the NBA Finals on Sunday as Tyrese Haliburton tore his Achilles just minutes into the game, which the Oklahoma City Thunder would go on to win. And that is where we will begin the new Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's just jump right into Game 7. Certainly not what the NBA would have wanted, because what you would have wanted was everybody healthy and a game that was tight down the stretch. Instead, Haliburton's injury basically kind of, you know, sucked the energy out of the building, certainly sucked the energy out of the broadcast from watching from afar, as OKC did trail at the half, but ultimately won comfortably to clinch its first NBA title since moving from Seattle. So the ratings were actually quite good, despite the fact that the game was not particularly good. 16.6 million viewers across ABC and ESPN+. The largest NBA audience since 2019, and the third largest since LeBron James left the Cavs to go to the Lakers. So that's since the last of those Cavaliers-Warriors finals in 2018. So ultimately, obviously, we know out-of-home viewing on a Sunday night in particular is going to play a big role with that. The household rating was only 7.6, which, I mean, this is Game 7 of the NBA Finals. If you had told me in 2019 that Game 7 of the Finals was going to get a 7.6 rating, that would have been quite the signal of where things were headed. But of course, in TV in 2025, what you see in the household rating can be counteracted a bit anyway by the share. Because even though the rating was pretty bad for a Game 7, the share, which was 26, is actually on par with Spurs Heat in 2013 Game 7. And not that far behind the most recent Game 7 Cavs-Warriors in 2016 or Celtics-Lakers in 2010. So the NBA, as I've said before, continues to get pretty much the same percentage of TVs in use that it ever did. The problem is there's a lot fewer TVs in use. And Armand, I'll bring you in on that note.
I want to ask you a question to start this thing off, John. I was thinking this as the numbers came out, and I heard you speaking with Richard Deitch on his podcast. And here's the question I have. Is the NBA pleased or relieved?
That's a really good question. The NBA put out a press release yesterday. I don't know how many people noticed it, saying that Pacers Thunder was up 15% from Celtics Mavericks last year. Now, obviously, that's going to be the total number of viewers, that at least 6 minute stat. One of the funny things about the NBA is that the NBA, despite being a league that takes more hits in terms of its ratings than any other, the NBA doesn't really kind of engage in the same kind of massaging and chicanery that we see other leagues get into, the kind of puffery. They don't really do that. And I don't blame them for maybe doing a little bit of that here, because obviously a 7-game series is going to have more viewers than a 5-game series. And ultimately, to the question that you posed, I would say there's reason to be pleased. The NBA took a huge risk with its product in this CBA to ensure no dynasties and no dominance among big markets. The NBA took huge risks to make that happen. And obviously, that's going to hit you hard on the average viewership. But if you end up with more competitive, unpredictable series, and you can get viewership for those series that, because they go the full 7 games, is, you know, obviously more respectable in the aggregate than what you might see on average, that is something that you can take some solace in. Is it a relief that it went 7? Yeah, because, those first 6 games really did very poorly. And there was never any lift. That series never got up off the ground except for Game 7. You're talking about $9.3 million for Game 6 of the NBA Finals? That's dreadful. Yeah, that's a far worse number, by the way, than $8.5 million for Lakers Heat in the bubble. Because that was on an NFL Sunday in October. I mean, that is dramatic competition. To get $9.3 million on a regular Thursday night in June with no meaningful competition is definitely not good.
And that's the part that almost surprised me. Not even $10 million for any game from 1 to 6. And then you make this drastic jump into $16.6 million for Game 7. You've talked about this. We've talked about this on this podcast, and you've talked about it in other places. Usually there's a rhythm. There's some sort of a trend. The first 4 games or so, you get a certain number. First 3 games, maybe you get a certain number, a certain range. Games 4 and 5, there's a bit of an increase. Then game 6, there's a little bit of an increase. And then we sort of move to game 7, which is the ultimate increase, but there are these signs throughout that we're moving in a certain direction. I'm fascinated by the fact that Indiana, Oklahoma City essentially was in park for the first 6 games and then took off into a different gear for game 7. And that's why I asked the question if the NBA is pleased or relieved, because even though game 7's always typically, game 7's always pull the series sort of up, and not just from a vibe standpoint or a public perception standpoint, but from an actual data and viewership standpoint, that always happens. But this case, from a viewership standpoint, this was a 1-game series. And I don't fully know how the NBA should feel about that, given that there was, as we've talked about, no lift from games 1 to 6. Obviously the number is good, and I do think that there's a degree to which the NBA should be celebrating it. But the fact that you got nothing essentially from games 1 to 6, I mean, game 6, 9.3 is dreadful. To go from that to 16.6 in game 7 just says that the interest was not going to be there for those first 6 games. And the interest was going to almost solely depend on whether or not we got some true stakes. And of course we got that the ultimate stakes in game 7.
Well, yeah. And I mean, what does it say about how the NBA markets itself? What does it say about how the NBA is presented and covered? It says that people looked around and said, I don't know these teams, and I'm not going to tune in unless I have to. That's an indictment, obviously, on how the league markets itself, but also on the league's television situation, right? You know, NBC would have made you care a little bit about Tyrese Halliburton by the time you got to, the NBA Finals. You would have had some level. And look, hey, in fairness, TNT did definitely, after that game winner in game 1 of the ECF, really went and highlighted him a lot in the sit-down interview with Reggie Miller. But, we talk all the time about storytelling. I know storytelling, I guess it doesn't trend on Twitter. Everyone is so enamored with social media, they don't realize that there's another part of the world that exists. And the fact is, you don't tell these guys stories when you get to the time for people to tune in. They're going to wait until the story is obvious, and that is winner take all.
Let me ask you this, John. You get a full 7-game series which is still down 9% from last year's Dallas-Boston series, which was only 5 games. Yes, the NBA should be encouraged by the Game 7 number, but should there be any cause for concern comparing this 7-game series number to a 5-game series number when the 5-game series got more numbers, got more viewers?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely think, well, let's begin with the fact that last year was Boston-Dallas. It was a horrible series, but it was still two very large markets. So you have an NBA Finals with two top 10 markets. You have an NBA Finals with familiar stars, a Boston team that had been to the Finals a couple of years earlier, and a Dallas team that had Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. That series should have done a lot better. But that doesn't mean it didn't do, by comparison to what you would expect for OKC Indiana, that doesn't mean it didn't do well. The thing that has been happening in the NBA is the difficulty has been trying to figure out what the peak is. Where is the NBA right now? Where is the ceiling? And when you saw Golden State Boston in 2022, you're like, wow, this is the new ceiling? I can't believe it. But then the next year you get Miami Denver and it has pretty much the same audience. And you know, it's Miami Denver. That's like the worst case scenario. So this can't possibly be the ceiling. Golden State Boston just did badly. But now after these last couple of years, I kind of wonder if that actually is the ceiling. And Miami Denver was just way more popular than anybody would have thought. And maybe the ceiling for the NBA in the post-COVID era is, you know, averaging 11 to 12 million viewers and a 6 rating. And if you don't have the right matchup, you're not going to get anywhere close to that, as we saw this year.
I was looking at your chart of the most watched NBA games since 2019. Folks, if you have not seen that, please go to sportsmediawatch.com and check out John's article on the Game 7 number. But I have noticed here that all of these games except for one on your list are NBA Finals games, and they're all in that, before Game 7, Indiana, OKC, they're all in that 11 to 14 million range. And I think it's worth asking, we have enough data, wouldn't you say, that we can sort of almost safely say that this is sort of where the NBA is now when it comes to the kind of number it's going to get for its biggest games. It seems like we have enough data over the past 5+ years, if not longer, that would maybe lead us to believe that this is just where the NBA is going to be right now. And it seems like until Game 7, the viewers had made it clear that there was not going to be enough interest to watch the game without everything being on the line. Add to that the recent numbers we've seen from the league's biggest games, and it seems like we found a spot. We found a range right now, and it's possible, very possible, that the NBA is going to be in this position for some time.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that I certainly don't see anything changing the status quo right now, right? You know, we have the drafts, and the draft is always a great opportunity for a new era to begin. We'll see what Cooper Flagg is able to do. You know, we'll see if San Antonio adding in Dylan Harper helps out and they become a dynastic team. But as of right now, you know, I think that's pretty much the range, not just for the NBA. I think what we have here is, unless you get something weird, something incredibly good like Dodgers Yankees, or incredibly bad like Thunder Pacers or Rangers Diamondbacks, and bad, of course, meaning just in terms of market size and the matchup. If, you know, unless you're getting one of those extremes, you're going to be right in that Astros, Phillies, right in that Heat, Nuggets kind of range going forward. And it kind of makes sense, because for the NBA to get the kinds of numbers that were normal a few years ago requires the league to get ridiculous shares of the audience. So Game 7 the other night had a 71 share among adults 18 to 34, right? That's ridiculous. That's just absurd for anything in TV outside of breaking news to get a 71 share in any demo. You're talking about a Sunday night, most watched night of the week, right? You might get a 71 share at 3 a.m., but Sunday night at 8 o'clock, that's absurd. 58 share in adults 18 to 49, 50 share in 25 to 54. So remember, 25 to 54, you're not talking as much about, you know, Gen Z watching, you know, iShow Speed on YouTube, right? 25 to 54, that's a demo that includes people who watch cable news, they watch TV all the time. You're getting a 50 share in that demo? That's crazy. I want to go back really quickly and take a look at what we saw in the World Series last year. Game 5, the clincher. This is via Programming Insider. That game had a 28 share, 9 rating and a 28 share. It had a 46 share in adults 18 to 49 and a 42 share in 25 to 54. That's baseball getting those kind of shares for a non-Game 7 World Series game. So basically, if you're getting 16, 17, 18 million viewers, the share of the audience that you're attracting is not realistic to get for, you know, a normal game or a normal series. So for the NBA, I think 6 rating, 11 million viewers is probably a more normal percentage of the linear TV audience and probably the best you can expect outside of an anomalous year.
I was thinking, what would be the NBA's equivalent of a Yankees-Dodgers World Series right now?
Well, you know, I would have said maybe Celtics-Lakers. I will always kind of wonder, what would Celtics-Lakers have gotten in the bubble? You know, because that was, I think, the series everybody expected in 2020. But Celtics-Lakers... Knicks-Lakers, There might not be a Dodgers-Yankees equivalent, because it's not just that the Dodgers played the Yankees, it's that Aaron Judge and the AL-leading Yankees faced Shohei Ohtani and the NL-leading Dodgers in a matchup of the two best teams.
Yeah, and that's really what I was thinking. Even if you get the teams, you get the franchise names you're hoping for, you don't get that kind of star power. And I think it's what made the World Series so special last year. I mean, you had stars all over the place, Freddie Freeman, and oh my goodness, there's so many people. And then you get the history of the franchises, the history of the franchises in the World Series. I mean, so many places you can go. You get the, you know, Freddie Meet Gibby call from Joe Davis, but so many stars aligned there. And I just don't see an equivalent for the NBA where you get sort of a similar striking while the iron is hot type situation. And so I guess when you put it all together, the NBA is where the NBA is. And I think this Pacers-Thunder series was a test. And given the fact that you got a 7-game series, given the fact that Halliburton goes down, because as soon as Halliburton gets hurt, I'm thinking the game is over. But credit to the Pacers even for the fact that they had the lead at halftime and they fought and fought again until they ran out of steam. But put all of those things into the equation and I guess you sort of end up just, this is where the NBA is right now. And it's important that the series got to 7 games because we got as full a picture as we possibly could of what this series was capable of doing.
I think if this series had not gone to that game 7, we're having a different conversation because you're looking at probably slightly more viewers than Rangers-Diamondbacks. But I mean, look, even if it had ended up on the level of Rangers-Diamondbacks, baseball got Yankees-Dodgers the next year. We know the NBA is not going to get anything like that next year because of the way the league is set up. But 1 year of bad ratings really never hurt anybody. So.
Can we talk about that a second? Because I heard when you were with Richard Deitch, he was talking about how the NBA had essentially avoided a bleep storm because they got a 7-game series, number one, and then number two, they got 16-plus million viewers for the 7th game. Do you think it would have been that bad had this series ended, say, in 6, and you would have gotten an average below 10 million for those first 6 games? Do you think it would have been as negative as Deitch seemed to imply?
Well, I mean, you know, really, I don't even know. You know, I try not to pay too much attention to people who weaponize ratings for political purposes. So I would assume they're still making hay about the numbers. I mean, I don't know. I do think that it going 7 obviously gives the NBA a good headline to go out of the season on. But the ratings are what they are. I mean, frankly, you know, if you wanted to make the bear argument for the NBA, it wouldn't be hard, because if not for that game 7, what are these numbers, the first 6 games? You know, I definitely think that this series, in my expectation, it actually ended up averaging about what I expected. If you remember the ratings prediction article I did, I said about 10.3 million viewers. But that was assuming a 5-game series. My prediction was 10.1 million. And it assumed a 5-game series. So 10.3 million with 7 games, if you presented to me how the series would play out from game 1 to game 7, I would have thought viewership would probably match or surpass last year, just based on the fact that last year did so poorly, and you have a game number 6 and game number 7. So, you know, it is what it is. The NBA kind of not out of the post-COVID lull. Frankly, I don't even think baseball is, but baseball got the Yankees and Dodgers, and that can make anything look good. I don't know if anybody noticed, Yankees-Dodgers averaged the kind of numbers that if it had happened a decade ago, we would have said, whoa, what's going on here, right? Because the post-COVID, the ceiling has changed for everything other than pro football. What I will say, though, is, you know, a lot of other sports are able to get to 18 million at least once or twice in this stretch, including baseball, which got to it for a game 5, including the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which got to it for Florida-Houston. That was a good matchup, but it wasn't some kind of, you know, it wasn't blue bloods. The Kentucky Derby is getting to nearly 17 million. You know, I mean, I know that's only an hour, but there's definitely a bearish argument to be made for the NBA. There's also an argument to be made that this is just the way television is. I think it will be very helpful for the league to begin this new media rights deal. And I will add, because the series went 7, the playoff viewership was up. And the NBA has no problem getting great numbers in early rounds of playoffs. I think maybe 4 straight years, the NBA has been at or near, you know, the highest level since 2011 in the early rounds of the playoffs. The difficulty is hitting those high notes in the finals. And it's not that hard to say, oh, well, we're going to have the most watched playoffs since 2011. But it's one of those odd things, you know. The NBA got to 7.35 million in the first round for a game 4 between the Lakers and Timberwolves, a non-clinching first round game. Non-holiday, wasn't Easter, got to 7.35 million viewers. Game 6 of the finals isn't even 2 million viewers beyond that point, with 9.28 million. What do you realistically do about that?
Wow, what a great point. That was an ABC game, right? The LA, yeah. the Sunday ABC game. Yeah, that's a great point, and something I had not thought about, but it does say something. And there's a lot of interest. I find myself even excited during the early rounds of the postseason, but for whatever reason, during the finals, the juice just doesn't seem to be there. And I don't know if it's because you want more stars, you want a LeBron in there, you want a Steph in there, but even when Steph was there in 22, it was just like there wasn't as much excitement, there wasn't as much pizzazz there. I don't know really what to say about where the NBA is, other than to say that it's clear that wherever they are, they are. It seems like it's where they're going to, you know what I mean? It's like this is where we are. We are driving 60 in a 65 right now. That's kind of just where we are, and it may be that way for a minute.
Yeah, I think so. What's the common denominator across all those finals? ESPN and ABC, right? And obviously, do I really think that the network makes a difference in terms of viewership? No, not usually. But let me ask you something, Armand. When was the last time you saw an advertisement for the NBA Finals?
The only thing I can think of is just a little acknowledgement on the bottom line from ESPN, but nothing extravagant.
Yeah, you know, I was in the hotel in Indianapolis last week, and I could hear an ad talking up Tyrese Halliburton, talking about Pascal Siakam. I was like, whoa, maybe I got ESPN all wrong. It was the local ABC affiliates ad for the finals, right? You know, ESPN's advertising for the finals was some highly stylized DJ imagery. If you're not looking at the TV, you're not going to know what's going on. I don't know the last time ESPN, I mean, honestly, we're going back a long ways because you can go all the way back to like the mid-2000s. It was kind of the same thing. Ran an ad like NBC used to do, the Jim Fagan or Mitch Phillips ads, saying what happened in the game and saying when the game is and why you should tune in.
Another finals thriller. The Lakers grab the upper hand. Now it's must win for Iverson and the Sixers. Game 4, Wednesday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, NBC.
And when all is said and done, you know, you gotta make people want to watch.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You know, I tuned into Game 7 because I was wondering if they would do anything special. They didn't. They did do the hour-long pregame show, but the open, there was nothing special to it. I mean, let me see. I shouldn't say that. They did show a lot of highlights of old Game 7s, but
they did.
You know, there was no pageantry, right? There was no pregame tease. I just keep coming back. It's the simplest thing in the world. It's like a culture war in sports TV between the people who think there was any merit to the way things were done 30 years ago. And the people who were like, no, 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 it's all got to just be social media yelling random songs from today and yesteryear somehow. And that's all it's got to be. And it's like, I'm sorry, but Rune Arledge, Dick Ebersol, Sean McManus even, they knew what they were doing. And what they were doing was not dated. It's actually timeless. It's actually the way it's supposed to be done. Do it the way that the best people in the industry who ever worked in this business did it, and maybe you'll see some different results.
Shivering in your own sweat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're about to run your guts out. Oh, man. To see that and to hear the showmanship style of Brent Musburger doing that open live, as you pointed out on X, doing it live, and then to hear the almost reverent approach from Bob Costas, and to then sort of match that with Al Michaels' serious tone prior to Game 7 of Spurs Pistons, it does something to you, man. There's a way to present a big game there's a way to present a big game. And where ESPN is right now, relative to its NBA coverage, they don't do it well. They don't prepare you for it well, and they don't present it well. And when I say prepare you for it, it's certainly more than checking out what suit Stephen A. Smith has prior to the game. And it's certainly
more. Did they do
more.
That on the air?
No, they didn't. I'm referring to the moment, the Indiana-New York moment from a couple of years back. But that was a low point. But we had another low point in Game 7 from a presentation standpoint. We had another one. And the way ESPN failed to really cover the Tyrese Halliburton injury at halftime was another loop. I was livid. I was livid that it was not covered the way it should have been covered. You had a brief comment by Kendrick Perkins, and then they go to the halftime highlights, whoever the sponsor was. And I just thought, man, can we present this? Can we do something different? I know you've got to honor your sponsorships and you've got to get your stuff in, but my goodness. The face of the franchise, a guy they're comparing to Reggie Miller, a Hall of Famer, a top 75 player of all time. They're comparing this guy to him. And not only are they comparing Tyrese Halliburton to this guy, he comes out and hits 3 3-point baskets in the first quarter, scores 9 points. They're on the roll, this underdog, scrappy team who time and time again finds a way to win, digs their way out of these holes. They find a way to claw back and pull off victories that seem almost impossible. As I heard one person say, this Mighty Ducks type team, the Indiana Pacers, and you don't really spend sufficient time talking about this story. And you also, mindlessly, you don't give Bob Myers the mic and let him talk a minute and a half, 2 minutes even, about how the injury to Tyrese Halliburton is similar to what Golden State went through in 2019 when Kevin Durant went down with an Achilles injury in the NBA Finals. It doesn't always have to be Stephen A. yelling about how OKC needs to step up. My goodness, can we just tell a story for a moment? Yeah. Can we sit on this, John? Not everything has to be a drive-through. Can we go in and sit down for a moment and spend some time talking? This is Game 7 of the Finals. It's Game 7. Spend a moment. Malika opened up the halftime talking about this gut-wrenching moment, I believe were her words. And this is the opportunity. Plus, Stephen A. runs over Bob Myers all the time on their studio coverage. This is why, if Bob Myers is not here for this, why is Bob Myers here? We don't need him for anything else. He didn't play in the NBA. This is why you want him here. This is why he's here. Give Bob Myers an opportunity to put some meat on the bone. Bob, tell us, what were Steve Kerr and the coaches talking about in the locker room when Kevin Durant went down? What did you guys as an organization think? What were you doing? What's happening right now in that locker? I don't just need some generic comment about how devastating this is. We know that. You are here because you have a perspective as a general manager that nobody else on this set has. Stephen A. doesn't have it. Perk doesn't have it. Malika doesn't have it. Give me something here and go in depth. Give me a story. Give me a quote. Did Steve Kerr say something? Did an assistant coach say something? Did Durant himself say something that can just shed some light on what Indiana Pacers fans and players and coaches might be thinking or going through right now? It was a missed opportunity, and I was livid because there should have been more done. There is a way to tell stories. When a story like that unfolds before you, you tell it. People were saying, were there too many shots of Halliburton's injury? I don't think there were. I think actually the director, I think his name is Mike Schwab. He and Mike Breen, if you notice, folks, during that entire stretch from the time Halliburton goes down until they go to commercial break, The only person who spoke was Mike Breen. And it was great. You did not need Burke. You did not need Jefferson. You got wide shots. You got tight shots. You got him banging the floor. You got Halliburton banging the floor saying no, no, no. And you got Breen shifting his tone from more of a game-calling tone to a serious tone because he knew. And you got Breen transitioning from information to almost sort of feeling the pain as a fan. It was great stuff. Breen did a great job, and director Mike Schwab did a great job of giving us multiple pictures. And the best shot of them all was Halliburton's father with his head in his hands. You could feel that. It was raw. It was real. It was tragic, but it was good television. To go from that to Stephen A. Smith barking about OKC and how they didn't answer the call, the two do not go together. And this has been the problem for so much of the time. You've got a legend in Mike Breen who can capture the emotion, who can be in the moment and chronicle this heartbreaking injury correctly. And then you toss it to a studio show where Stephen A. just runs over everybody, where you don't allow Bob Myers to have a presence, to really have authority, and where Stephen A. has no respect for anybody else on the desk. It's incongruous. The two do not go together, and it's a shame because that Game 7 presentation deserved better than that.
Well, we've talked a lot about ESPN's NBA coverage. I mean, you know, people will say, Jimmy Traina said it on his podcast this week. Oh, well, what's the big deal? But why are people still harping on this Stephen A.? They're not even doing it next year. It's going to be the inside guys. One, the inside Band-Aid is only going to last for a little bit. Now, don't ever believe Charles Barkley when he talks about his career plans. But I tend to think that 2-3 years is probably the most, unless this just really is seamless. But I don't think they want to do it. In the best case scenario, it's 5 years. You still have to fix the studio show problem. One, you actually have to respect the NBA. I do not believe that Jimmy Pitaro or Burke Magnus or other executives at ESPN have the respect for Adam Silver and the NBA that they were forced to have for Roger Goodell and the NFL. I think it's pretty obvious by what we see with the NBA that there is not that respect there. So that's number one. Number two is respecting the audience and understanding that the audience that's tuning in for the NBA Finals is not the 500,000 people a day who tune in to watch First Take. It's a much larger audience that's tuning in for the NBA, not for someone screaming about the NBA. At a certain point, there's got to be an explanation for why this product is so bad. You can tune in to the National Lacrosse League Championship and watch a better halftime and studio production than when you're tuning into Game 7 of the NBA Finals? What in the world is that? I'm asking you, is there anything in this business, in sports TV, worse than that halftime show? Is there anything?
Well, Skip's off TV, so can't say him.
Yeah.
I don't think so, man. Like, I'd have to give it some thought, but I remember during all of this countdown stuff, I'm like, when is Van Pelt and Tim Legler's SportsCenter segment? Can you just give me that? Just give me Van Pelt and Legler.
Well, that's the other thing. Why on earth obviously, I know they pay more money to Stephen A. Smith and Scott Van Pelt, but I mean, Scott Van Pelt, why not put him in the broadcast? Not even necessarily as the replacement for NBA Countdown. You know, you can actually use multiple studio crews during a broadcast, right? A lot of people do it. You can have one segment with the Countdown nonsense and then another segment with Van Pelt. That's just possible. Right, they had a one-hour pregame show, and I didn't see all of it because why on earth would I sit down to watch this show? I will say that halftime in Game 7 was the first time I'd watched that in a long time because I usually switch. That's how I discovered a show called Dear John, starring Judd Hirsch, because I switched during halftime of a playoff game, and you know I just went to like antenna TV, and there was some show called Dear John. I had never heard of it before, so you know it's. Expanded my horizons in TV. But there really needs to be an explanation. This has been a widespread critique from people who don't normally talk about sports TV in that way, from Colin Cowherd, who was shouted out on the draft inadvertently yesterday, to Bill Simmons. And yeah, okay, these are people with a bit of a bone to pick with ESPN, and Bomani Jones as well, talking about the prospect of ESPN fiddling with Inside. There's been a lot of not positive things that people are saying about this product and fears that they're expressing about what they're going to do. That, to me, is a problem. You can't circle the wagons, right? There's a circling of the wagons that's been happening with ESPN's NBA product, whether it's people communicating things directly to me about my coverage, or it's Richard Jefferson implicitly going after the people who are suggesting Doris Burke shouldn't be on the broadcast, which is understandable given like at least 80% of the anti-Doris stuff is just because she's a woman and not any actual cogent criticism. The game presentation, I would give more of a break to, but the overarching product here, the criticism is legit. With the exception of some of the stuff Doris deals with on social media, the criticism is legit. If you want it to stop, do a better job.
Thank you.
Because enough is enough already.
Thank you. It's and until you can prove that you can do a better job, give people what is your best. What do I mean? If you know, I mean, it's too late now, but if you know Countdown is a mess, and it's been a mess for years, until you can prove that you have something better, what do people respect? They respect Scott. Those Scott Van Pelt, Tim Legler SportsCenter segments were gold. Put that on Countdown. Let that be your show. You don't have anything better. Stephen A. Smith cutting off Bob Myers and Kendrick Perkins. The awkward tension. It's been there for quite a while between Bob Myers and Stephen A. Smith. This awkward tension that exists between the two of them. Malika Andrews being presented as though she and everyone else is sort of almost subservient to Stephen A. Smith. Like everyone has to sort of come under his authority. It's not First Take. On First Take, Stephen A. Smith is the grand poobah, the master, the king, the emperor, all of the things. But this is not First Take. This is a show that is here to tell stories about the league, reacting to what's happening in the game, and also telling stories about the players who make the game great. Do that better. If you can do this with NFL Countdown, with Ryan Clark, 45, Marcus Spears, 42, Jason Kelce, 37, they're current, they're fun, they're entertaining, they have chemistry, and you get this respected host like Scott Van Pelt on that Monday Night Countdown show, why can't you do something similar for the NBA?
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scott's Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Here's what I'm saying. You lay off most of your good hosts. You only have a few strong, authoritative hosts. Laura Rutledge, Scott Van Pelt, Mike Greenberg, I guess, Steve Levy. You only have a few trusted hosts who carry a certain level of authority. I was thinking about this. Think about the way Ernie Johnson commands inside the NBA. Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and Shaquille O'Neal, these massive personalities, huge egos. But when Ernie Johnson says, hush, we've got to go to a clip of Rick Carlisle at a press conference, there's a respect and there's an understanding. Now, of course, the producer is telling them that as well, but they call the man the godfather. I'm not saying everybody has to be that way. I'm saying, my goodness, can we get somebody in there who has the respect that everybody can understand? This is your role. This is what we're supposed to be doing here. Let's tell stories about this league that we're covering. Let's do it the right way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've done nearly 50 minutes. We've talked enough. You know, can we just be honest? ESPN by no means should still be the A partner. Burke Magnus says, we have to have the NBA Finals. It's a must have. You know what David Stern would have said? We know that you need us, we're still going to get a few billion dollars out of you per year for this contract, but you're not getting the NBA finals. And that's how that should have gone. But it is what it is. But anyway, let's move on. We've talked enough about this. The wonderful thing about the NBA offseason is that after tonight's second round of the draft, we don't have to watch this again until October, when hopefully the inside crew will make it a little bit better. Let's quickly dip into some other sports media stuff from the week. So let's quickly dip into NASCAR before we go, because the Amazon Prime viewership is in the books. Prime did its 5-race package. They averaged 2.16 million viewers for their 5 races, according to Nielsen's Big Data metric, which is down from the same 5-race weekends last year. So different races. It's down 16%. 16% decline. But in adults 18 to 34, up 36%. In adults 18 to 49, up 19%. In adults 25 to 54, up 28%. And in teens 12 to 17, up 93%, with the caveat that you're talking about 56,000 viewers, which frankly, I don't even think it was that high. There's no way 56,000 teens 12 to 17 were watching NASCAR. But the point being, all of those young demographics up double digits. Does that make up for your overall viewership declining by 16% and your viewership among 55 plus, which is your base, because that's still the biggest chunk of the audience, declining 36% to 1.1 million from 1.8 million a year ago? What do you think?
Well, that's honestly what I was going to ask you, because I'm trying to figure out. I have family in the South, in the Carolinas, a lot of NASCAR fans here. And I'm wondering if you're one of those older fans, that base that you're talking about, do you start to feel a little left out, John? As if you're not being considered anymore.
I mean, of course, right? I mean, that's kind of the nature of TV. So one of the things about TV that no one really publicizes very often is the fact that it's not how many viewers you get, but who those viewers are. And so 18 to 49 people have said before, oh, well, why do we talk about 18 to 49? It is a bit random, but it's adults under 50. I can see the logic of it. Adults under 50, adults under 35, if you want a smaller slice of that audience, that young adult audience, I get it. If you're over 55 years old, one, you have more money than younger people. You're more set. You're still alive. You're still active. You're still doing things. Why don't I matter? But what people don't understand is that the reason younger viewers are more valuable, and it's obviously an ugly thing to say that anyone's more valuable than anybody else, but to advertisers, younger viewers are more valuable because they don't watch TV. We just saw a Game 7 of the NBA Finals get a 71 share in 18 to 34. That's not because the finals was a humongous draw. It's because 18 to 34s aren't watching TV. So the ones who were lured to TV by a Game 7 of the NBA Finals were pretty much the only ones watching. And frankly, it's kind of weird that you had 29% of that audience watching something else, because I can't think of what else they would have been tuning into, right? So when we talk about 18 to 34s, they're pretty much gone. And if you can increase your viewership with that demo by 36% just by sacrificing the older demographic that will be back for the remaining races of the season, that's a deal you make every single time.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking as you were talking, it certainly sounds like NASCAR has determined the risk is worth the reward based on the viewership numbers, the trends toward these younger viewers who, as you talk about, who don't watch TV, and then you have an opportunity to set a foundation really for a new generation of fans that you can then hope last for generations, right? You hope that those 18-year-olds become 28-year-olds who watch NASCAR, become 38-year-olds who watch NASCAR, become 48-year-olds who watch NASCAR, and can stay with you for many generations. And so, yeah, it looks like while it could be perceived by some as a temporary setback, it looks like NASCAR has a plan here relative to these Amazon Prime races
And it's younger for sure. And usually in television language, younger is better.
Well, look, hey, if your viewership is down 16% because you have a plan, that's a lot better than if it's down 16% just because.
Right.
So we know why the viewership is down. NASCAR made a very specific decision, clear-eyed with its intentions and an understanding of what the impact was going to be. That's a lot different than, oh, we're down 16% and we haven't changed networks. We haven't, you know, I mean, that's a different thing. So to me, I see the prime races as being a success. I do. People will say, oh, you know, this is ridiculous. Less isn't more. Well, yeah, it actually is. I mean, if you understand how the industry works, you know, it's not, oh, older people have more money. They don't care. The point is, younger people don't watch TV. So older people having more money is kind of irrelevant to most of these advertisers. If you're trying to advertise to an 18-year-old kid, you're probably trying to advertise to him a product that maybe a 55-year-old wouldn't want. Or, even more than that, you might have enough 55-year-olds buying your product and you might want to get a few 18-year-olds buying it now, or at least aware of your brand. That's where the logic is. It is a little counterintuitive. I do get it, you know, and it's a little elitist. It's a little kind of messed up when you talk about what demos are better than others. Of course, I remember the I'm sure it was a leak by NBC to Variety about talking about, oh, the NBA audience is too black. I don't know if you'd ever remembered that.
Wow.
Had you ever seen that?
I got to go back and find that one.
Yeah, the NBA audience is too black. The overall ratings decline of the NBA is bad enough, but NBC is particularly concerned about the way the demographic is skewed toward blacks. And I'm quoting directly here. The bottom line problem with this disproportionate percentage of blacks is that advertisers, most advertisers, won't pay a premium for them, even when they cluster in the hard-to-reach 18 to 34 category. That's 2001. I don't think anything's changed from there. I don't think that's changed. Nobody's stupid enough to say it now, but I don't think anything's changed. And so there's a lot that gets into messy territory when we talk about what the right demos are. Doesn't change the facts of how the industry operates. And in the case of 18 to 34, in the case of age, I think it's less problematic. But if you are 55 years old and offended by the idea that NASCAR is happy to sacrifice a full third of your audience to get a few younger people, I get it. I don't think you're way off. It's understandable. But this is how the industry works, and sometimes it gets pretty ugly.
Yeah, and it can leave certain viewers feeling like they've been left behind. And so it becomes really a dilemma for those viewers to say, is this worth it? And I think that sort of, that approach, that mentality is going to be really have to, that mentality is going to be challenged for viewers in other areas as well. Like with the move to streaming that some of these leagues have made, you're going to have to say to yourself, is this worth it? Is it worth it for me to pay this extra money to watch this product? How much do I love NASCAR? How much do I really need to see a race in New Hampshire or Iowa? Like, do I really need to see this? Is this something that I really want to see? Or will I wait for something to pop up on Fox, a channel I know I'll always have? And so it's a dilemma. And Amazon has made its choice. And now viewers, particularly viewers over 50, over 55 are going to have to make their choices as well.
So it's tough. I mean, you are leaving people behind, and doing so is never some kind of great thing. You know, I've seen the complaints. I've seen people say, I'm never going to watch NASCAR again. You know, I watched for 40 years, don't have time to go find it, can't rewind it, so I'm done with it. And like, you kind of roll your eyes like, okay, it's not that hard. But if you're not used to it and you've been doing this for, again, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, I understand. I understand, but it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change the calculus of how this industry works.
And for some people, it's a matter of principle, and I get that too. I shouldn't have to go far looking for the sport that I've always had. But times do change. And we went through this to some degree when stuff started moving from broadcast to cable. And we're going through it here now in a bit of a different way, obviously. But it's going to require more work on people's part, more money on people's part.
And folks are going to have to decide if they want to, if they can't get enough of NASCAR, this is where you're going to have to go, or you're going to have to learn how to go without it from time to time.
I will say people have been raving about this product. They've been raving about NASCAR on Prime. Even that, it's not a ratings play, but when you can have your product presented in a great, you know, high quality way, that's a win as well. I will note, NASCAR with younger viewers, I like to tell this joke, this story. You know, when I used to teach and I'd bring up NASCAR, I always knew that nobody in the classroom knew jack about NASCAR. And one time I was telling a NASCAR anecdote, and I'm teaching on Zoom. I look out and everyone's kind of got a blank face. Anyone even know anything about NASCAR in this room? The one kid who raises his hand, his last name is Joy. So I just joked, hey, are you related to Mike Joy? Turns out it was his son. And that's, so if that's pretty much the young NASCAR audience until now, right? People related to the broadcasters. And so what they're trying to do in this Prime era is to make sure it's not just Mike Joy's son who's watching, but other people who happen to be under 35 years old. I think it's a worthwhile effort.
So do I.
All right, that is enough for us here on the podcast. It is the slow period of sports TV, and that means we're not going to be doing the podcast on a weekly basis necessarily. We'll be taking next week off, even though the 4th of July isn't until Friday, so really, we could still record, but I'm not going to, right? There's nothing going on, and, you know, I mean, why not take a little break? So over these next few weeks, we'll be here and there. Maybe we'll have a few podcast episodes, depending on how news develops or if we have some guests, but we'll be probably on an irregular schedule from here until the start of the NFL season. So stay tuned, and thanks for listening. Thanks to Armand, as always, for joining me, and we'll be back down the road.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.